tonight on Arena. We explore the enduring appeal of Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca and Dermot Bulger on his Secrets Never Told. You can text us on 51551 or tweet at RTE Arena. Rebecca is probably the best known and most successful of all of the novels of Daphne du Maurier. The story is set in a house called Mandalay, owned by wealthy widower Maxim de Winter. There, his deceased wife, Rebecca, still commands a mysterious presence, increasingly felt by his new, nervous, young, unnamed bride. The novel Rebecca has never gone out of print since its first publication in 1938. It was adapted into a stage play by the author herself in 1940, and in 1940 again into a movie directed by Alfred Hitchcock. This week, Netflix has released a brand new screen version of Rebecca, which we will be reviewing on tomorrow's show. But joining me now to speak about the novel, about Daphne du Maurier, and the checkered history of Rebecca is Edel Coffey. Edel, Rebecca was published, as I said, in 1938. It was her fifth novel, but it wasn't at all well received by the critics. Why was that?
No, it wasn't. And I think a lot of it was to do with snobbery and also how that kind of gothic fiction was viewed at that time. It was an absolute bestseller with readers all over the world, both in the UK and in America. But it was described and dismissed very quickly by critics as a novelette, as a romantic fiction, as women's fiction. And it was just seen as a story for women. But when you look at the novel itself, it is extraordinary that it was dismissed in that way, because it is such an incredible novel. It is completely unique and it is so disturbing and atmospheric.
So I just gave a little presse of the novel there, but remind us a little more of the plot of Rebecca.
Yes. As you mentioned there, it's, well, first of all, it's got one of the most well-known opening lines of any book in literature. Last night I dreamt I went to Mandalay again. And Mandalay has to be described as one of the characters in the book. It is the big house where Maxim de Winter lives. Maxim de Winter is in Monte Carlo at the opening of this book, in Monte Carlo, I should say, at the opening of this book. And there he meets this young, unnamed woman. She's only ever known in the book as Mrs. de Winter, which is seen as a reference to the fact that she subsumes herself completely for this man. She's a young companion, a paid companion to a wealthy American woman. And she meets Maxim de Winter and they start to spend some time together. And within a matter of weeks, it seems, he has proposed to her and he asks her to come back to Mandalay with him. Now, this is all set in South of France. It's all beautiful. It's a honeymoon period. And then
And she is hearing, even in the South of France, she is hearing that his previous wife, Rebecca, was the most beautiful woman anybody had seen. So she's fairly intimidated even before she arrives in Cornwall.
Listen, Kay, it's your basic nightmare as the new girlfriend. It's like she was beautiful. She was the love of his life. She was so elegant. She had great style. She could sail. This woman could do everything. And so she's racked with intimidation by the time she gets to Mandalay. And it doesn't help that when she gets there, she meets Mrs. Danvers, who is the housekeeper. And Mrs. Danvers' relationship with Rebecca goes back years. Like, she came to Mandalay with Rebecca when Rebecca married Mr. de Winter. And she has what can only be described as an obsessive love for her. We don't really know much about their relationship, but it does always strike you in the book and in all the films that we've seen as just slightly too close.
Yes, she may in fact be in love with Rebecca.
Exactly. And they may have had a sexual relationship, and de Maurier always leaves that kind of open to interpretation.
Now, we have a clip. This is from later on in the book and the film. It's Mrs. de Winter, who Joan Fontaine played in the Alfred Hitchcock version. And it's after a costume party that went incredibly wrong due to Mrs. Danvers setting up this Mrs. de Winter. So Mrs. de Winter runs upstairs and runs into Rebecca's old bedroom, which she shared with her husband, obviously. And she finds Mrs. Danvers there, who is going, of course, not to console her.
You wouldn't think she'd been gone so long, would you? Sometimes when I walk along the corridor, I fancy I hear her just behind me. That quick, light step. I couldn't mistake it anywhere. It's not only in this room. It's in all the rooms in the house. I can almost hear it now. Do you think the dead come back and watch the living?
I don't believe it.
Sometimes. I wonder if she doesn't come back here to Manderley. Watch you and Mr. De Winter together. You look tired. Why don't you stay here a while and rest? And listen to the sea. So soothing. Listen to it. Listen. Listen to the sea.
Creepy. Judith Anderson there as Mrs. Danvers and Joan Fontaine as Mrs. De Winter from Rebecca from the 1940 version made by Alfred Hitchcock. So Rebecca was written at a difficult time in the life of Daphne du Maurier.
Yes.
Was there things in her life then that might have influenced the story?
Yeah, I fully believe so. She had gone to Cairo with her husband, who was in the army, and he was posted there, and she had joined him there, and that was the first time she'd ever gone on a posting with him. She was pregnant with her second daughter, and her time in Cairo, she hated it there, first of all, but she was expected to be an army wife in the way that she hadn't been when she was at home. So she was hosting dinners and had to attend dinners hosted by other army wives as well. And it wasn't really her thing. And also it was taking her away from her writing. And she tore up the first 10,000 words, her first attempt at writing Rebecca. And she hadn't ever done that before with a novel. So it was very difficult. But she started again while she was still in Cairo, and she finished it when she returned to Cornwall, to her version of Manderley, which was called Mena Billy. Now, she sent it to her publisher and sent it with a note kind of saying, look, it's a bit grim, it's a bit depressing, I don't know about it. And he wrote back and said, it is the most exquisite romance story, and it's definitely going to be a bestseller. And it was. He was right. But the notion that it's the most exquisite love story or romance story is just, it's baffling to me anyway, but you can see how it might be sold as that. But there's so many things wrong with that description in terms of romance and the idea of romance. Now, we find out why Rebecca was killed or died, and I'm not sure if we should go into that or not, because some people won't have seen the Netflix
Maybe not,
adaptation.
Especially with the new Netflix coming
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is a mystery. It is there's lots of aspects around that don't really fall into the romance category for me, and obviously didn't for Daphne du Maurier, and she took great exception to being described as that.
Yes, because Maxim de Winter is a very interesting character, isn't he? I mean, he's very attentive to Mrs. de Winter when he meets her as a young woman in Monte Carlo. But then he becomes more distant and a little bit abrasive towards her when they're in Manderley.
Yes, it's a familiar trajectory of a lot of relationships, Kay. But yeah, he does. And, you know, the whole time she's haunted by this idea of this perfect wife before her and this beautiful woman. And so she puts it down to that. She thinks, oh, he loved her so much and he can never love me that much. And she was so accomplished and I'm just... And of course, it doesn't help that she comes from a different class than Rebecca and she feels so inferior. And but he's a mysterious sort of brooding type. And that's also a throwback to Jane Eyre, which this book is indebted to in many ways. It's part of the Gothic tradition. You know, there was the big house, there's a big fire in the big house, there's a brooding
man. The first wife in the attic.
Exactly. So there's all those things, and they are tropes and part of the tradition of Gothic novels. But also, he's an interesting character, and I think Daphne du Maurier wants to use him as the sort of the centre point or the fulcrum on which she hangs her different female characters to dance around him. He is just, he's a very typical man of the time. He's privileged, he is rich, and he has that sort of sense of entitlement. You know, he's off being busy and he leaves her alone for long stretches of time because he is doing important things with his time. And, you know, that leaves her alone to kind of wander into Rebecca's room, to find all of her stuff, to find all the evidence of her accomplishments and to feel even worse about herself.
Again, as the story goes on, then we learn more about Rebecca, that she herself was a woman of the world.
That's a nice way of putting it. Yes.
And how does this reflect this other woman, this first wife? How does that reflect some of Daphne du Maurier's own life? Because she too was very sexually experienced, quite open sexually.
Yeah, I think this book is representative of the huge struggle she had herself between being a wife to a very honourable and honoured army man, and also being that individual creative type who was incredibly successful in her own right and obviously had huge creative impulses and urges to write. And I think in that time it must have been very difficult for her to find that time or to demand that time or to justify taking that time away from her family, away from her husband. And I think that's what both of those women represent in the book. You know, you've got Mrs. De Winter, who is, we never find out her name. She's our narrator and we don't know her name. We just know that she's Mrs. De Winter. And she's there as the kind of very accepting, very subsumed, very demure wife that du Maurier obviously thinks is the sort of exemplary wife of the time. And then there's Rebecca, who is this uncontrollable, wild woman who may have been bisexual, who was having affairs, who was beautiful, who was a socialite, who was accomplished. And she kind of has this, there's a sense when you're reading the book of her as almost like an actual sort of spirit of the sea, not a human in that way. And it's that representation of women's sexuality as a scary thing or a thing to be afraid of.
And let's hear one of the clips we have of Daphne du Maurier. Here she's talking about the book The Loving Spirit, but in the clip it's from a television show called The Make-Believe World of Daphne du Maurier. She's interviewed by a guy called Cliff Micklemore. But here she talks about the first novel, but she talks about that need of being independent.
How much advance did you get from the publisher?
I think I had, for Loving Spirit, I wouldn't swear to it, but I would think it was about £75 advance.
Was that a lot or a little?
It seemed a hell of a lot to me, yes. And it was quite good in those days.
Could novelists make money in those days?
Well, bit by bit. I can't remember how well the Loving Spirit sold, but obviously from that time on I began to get a little bit independent. You see, and so could more or less come down to four, do what I liked and pay for myself, which was my main object always.
Because you go on about this, about the driving forces. I must make money, you say.
Yes, yes. I mean, the driving force was I must write, get this story out of my system. But following closely upon that, I must be independent. I always wanted to be independent. And not from any antagonism to the family, but simply so that they didn't have to pay for my wishes, whims or whatever.
Daphne du Maurier there from 1977. So, yes, she was a woman trying, in a very conservative world, trying to make her own independent pathway.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a really interesting sentence in that clip there was where she said, where I can come down to Fowey, which was where her home was in Cornwall, and do what I like. I think there was an absolute desire to be her own agent, to do what she wanted to do without any of those. Like, she's probably a woman who should never have been, should never have gotten married, because the only expectation on her from her family in her biographies is that she would make a good marriage, and she did. But it sounds like after the war, when her husband came home from the Second World War, the marriage seemed to have been over. And after that, they both had affairs, and he had a drinking problem. But it does seem like she might have been a much happier person. And I'm really surmising here, but she might have been a much more satisfied person, just living independently and doing what she liked.
We'll go on to talk about some of the adaptations now, but maybe we'll just listen to Daphne du Maurier talking on Desert Island Discs. This is, again, from 1977. Here she's talking to Roy Plumley, and he asks her about the screen adaptations of her work.
You've been rather fortunate in the number of your stories which have been picked up by the film industry.
Not a tremendous number, really, you know. Rebecca, Frenchman's Creek, My Cousin Rachel, The Birds.
That was from
Hitchcock,
a short story.
Yes. And The Scapegoat with Alec Guinness.
Yes.
Don't Look Now is another short story. That's about... Hungry Hill was another one, All About Ireland.
That's rather an impressive total.
It's only about 6 or 7 out of about 20.
Yes.
Well, pretty good, yes.
Hitchcock made a couple of them.
I think he did Rebecca and The Birds.
Which ones have you liked most?
I would think Rebecca. Yes, I think that was... very good.
That was Laurence
Olivier,
wasn't it?
Yes, Laurence Olivier and Joan Fontaine. I would say that was definitely the best.
Daphne du Maurier from Desert Island Discs. I mean, she was very well served by her film adapters, wasn't she?
She was, even though she gives him scant praise for it there, where she says, I think Hitchcock did The Birds and Rebecca. But she really was. I mean, in 1940, he won the best film Oscar for Rebecca, and it really... it must have been such a dramatic film, considering the psychological atmosphere of terror and that kind of haunting. It's very unsettling. It's very unseemly.
She wasn't happy with The Birds. She wasn't, because she saw it as an environmental tale, whereas he saw it as kind of a moral tale about sexual promiscuity, wasn't it?
Yeah, he changed it. And also he moved it from Cornwall, which she didn't like. But she did like Rebecca. He changed Rebecca too, but that was to do with the censors. But it's interesting that the new Rebecca as well has also been slightly changed from the book version in terms of the ending. And I find it really interesting that none of the male directors who have adapted her films have been able to stick to exactly her story as it's written in the book, which is part of the reason why none of these adaptations get exactly to be as completely intoxicating as the book is. But also it's interesting, I think, is there a reason why they can't accept her version, which is quite dark? Or is it just entertainment values? And it's like, look, everybody likes a happy ending in a film, so let's go with this ending.
So I know you've seen the new film version, and as I say, we're going to review it tomorrow. Is it worth seeing?
It's definitely worth seeing because, first of all, in these very bleak times, the first half hour of the film is an absolute holiday for the mind because it's in the sumptuous, beautiful, most beautiful hotel. It's supposed to be set in South France. There's all this sunshine. There's a little bit of nudity on the beach and the sand is on her skin and you can nearly
taste... Lily James plays
Mrs. De Winter. And you can nearly taste your summer holiday of years ago, okay? So for a little bit of light relief, it's worth it for that. But also, it is kind of gorgeous. It's beautiful to look at. It's like Downton Abbey. But it's just, despite everything that they've thrown at it, all the gothic sort of tropes are there, it lacks the emotional impact of the novel. Like, I would recommend the novel heartily to anybody, but yeah,
and can you read the novel now without imagining Laurence Olivier or now Armie Hammer as Maxim?
Well, I think I'd prefer to imagine Armie Hammer as Maxim now every time I read the book because he's absolutely beautiful in the film. But I can actually read the book. You see, I read the book before I had seen any film adaptation. I think once you've done that, you always visualise
your own
image.
You had your own private Maxim.
But he is perfect in that role. He's perfect. Really, people will remember him as the Winklevoss twins from that social network film years ago. So that's who's in the Maxim De Winter role. So
Yes. Okay, well, we'll see what our critics think tomorrow night. Adele Coffey, thank you very much for speaking to me about Daphne du Maurier and the lasting appeal of the 1938 novel Rebecca. The new screen version of Rebecca is out now on Netflix, and as I said, we'll be reviewing it on tomorrow's show.